Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
Hi, this is Martha from Austin, Texas. I am currently in Nelson, British Columbia, where I have just finished watching my 9-year-old gymnastic niece's end-of-year show at Glacier Gymnastics. She and all the girls were so great. This podcast was recorded at
11:21 a.m. on Wednesday, July 12th, 2023.
Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Enjoy the show.
Congratulations.
Ooh, Austin, great spot for tacos. Hey there, it's the NPR Politics Podcast. I'm Deepa Shivaram. I cover the White House.
And I'm Mara Liasson, national political correspondent.
And today we're joined by Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio. Hey, Josh.
Hello.
So 2024 presidential candidates are ramping up their campaigning in New Hampshire, which has long been the first presidential primary in the country. Hashtag first of the nation. We all know this. But things are a little bit wonky this year. New Hampshire Democrats are holding an unsanctioned primary. Josh, what is an unsanctioned primary? What's going on here?
Well, as you know, the DNC, with the backing of President Biden, decided to rejigger the primary schedule, having South Carolina vote first. New Hampshire has a state law, however, which says essentially it must go first 7 days before any similar contest. That would traditionally mean Iowa could go first since it's a caucus. Election officials here and leaders in both political parties said New Hampshire will be going first. And New Hampshire primary has always been dependent on who chooses to show up, and whether President Biden chooses to put his name on the ballot here is something that has Democrats agitated, because like right now, it doesn't seem like he probably will.
Does that mean no delegates get awarded to whoever wins by the Democrats?
It could mean that. You know, New Hampshire has been subject to such threats before, and it hasn't moved them. You know, in New Hampshire, the point of view from the politicians is we're going to have our primary, and party leaders will tell you they're not terribly concerned about the delegates. And, you know, the candidates are going to have to make their own calculations as to whether they want to participate or not.
So right now, what does this mean for how much Biden is going to campaign in the state?
We don't know. I mean, there is a former party chair who wants to have essentially a write-in campaign to make sure that Biden is at least represented on the ballot, because she fears, and this is Kathy Sullivan, she was a DNC member and a longtime party chair, is that in the absence of Biden being on the ballot, that will essentially guarantee that RFK Jr. or Marianne Williamson would win. And in her estimation, and the estimation of a lot of establishment Democrats, that would be bad for all, you know, parochially bad for New Hampshire. You know, there is really a desire to ensure from these people's point of view that New Hampshire always be first. The state law will determine it. And they don't want the New Hampshire primary to become essentially a sideshow. So they would like, if in fact things go to pass the way they seem to be, that Joe Biden would carry the New Hampshire primary. At least the establishment Democrats want that.
Well, what's so interesting about Kathy Sullivan's request, or really cry for help, that people should at least write in Biden, is going to be this big battle over the perception of what is the New Hampshire primary. In other words, if Marianne Williamson or Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wins, is that a rebuke to Biden, or is that just phony baloney since Biden wasn't even on the ballot? This is going to be symbolic, but symbols are important. Is it going to be a symbol of how weak Biden is, or if he crushes them with a write-in campaign, how strong he is? We don't know.
Right. And earlier, Josh, you mentioned Robert F. Kennedy, and I want to get into that a little bit. Just to catch up, he's an environmental lawyer, rampant conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer, but he's running against Biden in the Democratic nomination, like we said. What has his message been, and how are voters responding to him in the state?
Well, he's been here, I think, three times early on. I mean, he gave a speech sort of introducing himself to voters, and I covered that speech. That was one where the audience included certainly people drawn to his environmental work, people who are skeptical of vaccines, and, you know, sort of a anti-establishment, sort of almost like a raw milk sort of hippie element was there. There are some sort of libertarians who are intrigued by him. But the other two events where I've covered him, I mean, the audience is increasingly not one populated by anybody you'd consider Democratic Party regulars. I covered him when he campaigned at a libertarian camp out known as Pork Fest, run by the Free State Project. And, you know, he went over pretty big there. But again, these are not traditional Democratic voters. New Hampshire does have an open primary, and that is something that will be interesting to watch, really, in both Democrat and Republican Party, where independent voters choose to participate. There are some Republicans who would say a lot of them are going to vote in the Republican primary, which could skew the electorate.
Right.
As far as, you know, what this means for RFK, I mean, he doesn't seem to be running an on-the-ground campaign here, and the sorts of Democrats the Kennedy name might attract are not going to be attracted to him the more they listen to him. So it's going to be interesting to see what he's really up to. Is he really seriously running with hopes of winning an election, or simply to, you know, sort of further his sort of brand culturally? I don't know at this point.
Isn't it just a big fat target for Republicans who want to cause Biden as much problems as they can? And they'll encourage people to vote in the Democratic primary for RFK, because especially if it looks like Trump is way ahead and that primary isn't as close, they're going to encourage independents and libertarians and Republicans to go and vote in the Democratic primary just to hurt Biden.
I think there that could happen. I mean, how encourageable the population may be to do that, I think, is an open question. I mean, there will be lots of Democrat-leaning independents who will vote in the Republican primary strategically. I mean, a certain amount of that always happens. And, you know, if you look
right
at somebody running the Republican primary like Chris Christie, who's running explicitly as an anti-Trump candidate, you know, I've talked to Democrats who say I may vote for him in the primary. There are others who obviously want Trump to be the nominee since Biden beat him. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really hard to say how organizable, you know, the population who might vote for Kennedy could be.
And of course, you said you don't know how incorrigible his supporters are. I was thinking you said incorrigible, because New Hampshire is incorrigible, and New Hampshire is pissed off that the Democratic Party has taken away their status as first in the nation. And now they have a way to show it. They have a way to cast a protest vote, go into the Democratic primary and vote against Joe Biden for Marianne Williamson or RFK. What do you think of that?
For some, yes, that may happen. But it's also true that at least the real sort of institutional defenders of the primary, they still think that New Hampshire, you know, has a reputation for being serious, and they want to show that New Hampshire deserves to be first in the future, regardless of what the DNC may have decided for now, and whether voting for RFK or Marianne Williamson would further that. I think they would say it wouldn't. So there are pushes and pulls for them. I mean, they're certainly angry, but they don't want to do something that would essentially verify the view that plenty of other states have, that New Hampshire's a place that, you know, has had its turn and shouldn't get it again.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from Washington Wise. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how it may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Josh, on the other side of the aisle here, New Hampshire is still the first primary in the nation. Out of all the GOP candidates in the race so far, which ones seem to be prioritizing the Granite State? And what has their strategy been so far?
Well, former President Trump has been here several times. Chris Christie, who's running explicitly as an anti-Trump candidate, has indicated that New Hampshire is going to be where he does a lot of his campaigning, feels there's an audience for his kind of politics here. There wasn't a huge audience for that the last time he ran. Ron DeSantis is mounting a vast ground game in terms of the super PAC aligned with him. He's got to do something sometime early in order to be viable. Vivek Ramaswamy has certainly tried to make inroads here. But, you know, the polls do indicate here, as they do elsewhere, that former President Trump does have a commanding lead. So, you know, New Hampshire is a state that voted for Trump twice in the primary. And you know, he's looking pretty solid here. And he has been showing up.
Mara, Chris Christie, former New Jersey governor, is kind of putting all of his eggs in one basket here with this state. Is this a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I think there's really nothing else that he can do. He's polling in the low single digits, and his whole candidacy has been styled as a kind of heat-seeking missile. He's not necessarily in it to win it. He's in it to stop Donald Trump, and he considers himself the only Republican in the race who's tough enough and brave enough to go after Trump directly. In order to do that, in order to go after Trump, he has to get on the debate stage. So he has to win delegates. He has to poll better than he is. And focusing on New Hampshire makes sense because there's really no other strategy open to him.
Well, he did the same thing the last time he ran. And, you know, his standout moment in that candidacy was essentially taking down Marco Rubio on the debate stage the day before the New Hampshire primary. It may have damaged Chris Christie as much as it did Rubio. Christie immediately dropped out of the race after New Hampshire. You know, we'll see. He rolled out his campaign or he launched it here. It was a crowd stocked with people from New Jersey and, you know, kind of anti-Trump Republicans and New Hampshire independents. If you go to other campaign events of other candidates and you ask voters there, who are you looking at? Chris Christie does not come up.
So we're still many months away from this primary, which is so wild to me because of how New Hampshire has just been a staple in all of our primary coverage. And this is just, like we said earlier, a little wonky this year. But as we move forward on the Democratic side, on the Republican side, what are you both watching for as all of these campaigns ramp up?
Well, I'm watching for whether the Republicans can solve their collective action problem. They didn't solve it in 2016. As long as Trump runs against a big field of alternatives, they will split the anti-Trump vote and he can win primary after primary with 35% of the vote or 40% of the vote because they are winner-take-all battles. So that means that in order to beat Trump, all the other Republican candidates except for one have to drop out and unify around one alternative. People thought in the beginning it might be Ron DeSantis. That doesn't look like it'll be that way. So if they all stay in, they give Trump a big advantage. And I'm wondering if they'll do that again.
I think Mara makes a good point. You know, I'm just curious to see if you know, from a parochial point of view, does the DNC end up cutting New Hampshire a little bit of slack? You know, there have been sequential deadlines about, you know, changes to election laws that would even allow New Hampshire to remain in the early voting state window. You know, people here are hoping that there might be a dispensation still coming from the DNC. Hard to see that based on the public comments from national Democrats. I'm also curious to see of what this means on the Democratic side for Biden here. There are lots of Democrats who appreciate his policies, but, you know, do they get out and, you know, mobilize? I mean, this is a time when normally there begin to be sort of organizational efforts that would go sort of up and down the ticket for Democrats without the impetus of defending Joe Biden and hoping that he wins again. What are the implications for down ticket Democrats? You know, it's hard to see Kennedy and Williamson picking up, you know, much more traction than they're getting now. But, you know, the night is relatively young in this thing. And there are going to be factors that shape the Democratic mindset of the voters that you know, we don't know yet. It's just hard to see how this plays out. And from a New Hampshire point of view, there's a lot of anxiety about what this means institutionally for the New Hampshire primary. You know, it's always been dependent on candidates showing up and, you know, an incumbent president not showing up at all among people who really want New Hampshire to stay first or potentially reclaim with a sanctioned primary in the future. That has institutional Democrats very anxious.
Right. That's a big game changer here. And, you know, I covered the primary in 2020. I was with Elizabeth Warren in New Hampshire quite literally every 3 days. I'm like really trying to wrap my mind around how crazy this primary is and what a shaky state New Hampshire is in. And Joe Biden, I mean, he didn't exactly thrive in New Hampshire in the primary in 2020.
His campaign was looking really rocky.
He shot straight to South Carolina. And, you know, obviously that ended up working out there. And the strategy has clearly pivoted to that. But it is really extraordinary to see how the arc of this has really changed in the past 4 years.
It has. I mean, prior to Biden, no candidate had ever finished worse than second in New Hampshire who ended up getting elected president. And he finished fifth and sort of a flat fifth and managed to get there. So, you know, it's understandable that he has no institutional bias in favor of keeping New Hampshire.
It's crazy. All right, Josh Rogers, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be here.
That's all from us today. More tomorrow. I'm Deepa Shivaram. I cover the White House.
And I'm Mara Liasson, national political correspondent.
And thank you for listening to the NPR Politics Podcast.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.